I checked her all out for remotes, said Turl. He laughed and laughed at his joke as he climbed in. You know what I'm referring to, Ratbrain. No over the cliff on fire today. He hit a button and the doors closed and sealed. He turned on the breathe gas louvers and the atmosphere changed in a blink. Crap, were you stupid? He laughed some more. The ground car went hurtling toward the open, 4 feet above the earth, accelerating to 200 miles per hour in a breath, almost breaking Johnny's spine. Turl unsnapped his face mask and threw it aside. You see those doors? Don't ever hit a latch or try to open one when I'm not wearing a mask, animal. This thing would wreck with no driver. Johnny looked at the latches and buttons and noted the information carefully. What a good idea. Where are we going? He asked. Oh, just a drive. Just a drive. Seeing the sights. Johnny doubted that. He was watching every control action Turl was making. He could identify most of the levers and buttons already. They sped north and then in a long curve headed south of west. Despite the blur of speed, Johnny could see they were following some ancient grass-overgrown highway. By the sun, he marked their course. Through the heavily plated gunner's slits, he could see a mass of ancient buildings and a field. A high mountain lay beyond. A range lay to the west. The ground car slowed and drew up a distance from the largest building. Johnny looked at the desolate scene of ruin. Turl reached into the ground car bar and drew himself a small pan of Kerbango. He drank it off and smacked his mouth bones and belched. Then he put on his face mask and hit the door button. Well, get out. Get out and see the sights. Johnny shut off his air and removed his mask. Turl flipped the leash to give it length and Johnny got out. He looked around. In a nearby field, there were some mounds of what had been machines, perhaps. The structures before him were impressive. Near where they stood was a sort of trench, long overgrown, curving. The grass was tall and the wind from the mountains moaned lonesomely. What was this place? Said Johnny. Turl stood with his elbow braced against the top of the car, indolent, very casual. Animal, you are looking at the primary defense base of this planet during the days of man. Yes, prompted Johnny. Turl reached into the car and brought out a Chinko guidebook and threw it at him. A page was marked. It said, A short distance from the mine site lies an impressive military ruin. 13 days after the cyclo attack, a handful of men stood off a cyclo tank for over 3 hours using primitive weapons. It was the last resistance that was overcome by the cyclos. That was all it said. Johnny looked around. Turl pointed at the curved trench. It happened right here, he said with a sweep of his paw. Look. He dealt out more leash. Johnny crept over to the trench. It was hard to see where it began and ended. It had some stones in front of it. The grass was very tall, moving in the wind. Look good, said Turl. Johnny moved down into the trench, and then he saw it. Although a great time had passed, there were scraps of metal that had been guns. And there were scraps of uniforms, mainly buried, hardly more than impressions. Suddenly, he was gripped by the vision of desperate men fighting valiantly, hopelessly. He glanced across the field before the trench and could almost see the cyclo tank coming on, withdrawing, coming on, battering them at last to death. Johnny's heart rose, swelled in his chest. Blood hammered in his ears. Turl leaned indolently against the car. Seen enough? Why have you shown me this? Turl barked a laugh behind his mask. So you won't get any ideas, animal. This was the number one defense base of the planet, and just one measly cyclo tank knocked it to bits in a wink. Got it? That wasn't what Johnny had gotten. Turl, who couldn't read English, had not read the still plain letters on the building. Those letters said, United States Air Force Academy. Well, put on your mask and get in. We have other things to do today. Johnny got in. It had not been the primary defense base. It was just a school, and that handful of men had been schoolboys, cadets, and they'd had the guts to stand off a cyclo tank, outgunned, hopeless, for 3 hours. As they moved off, Johnny looked back at the trench. His people. Men. He found it hard to breathe. They had not died tamely. They had fought. 7. Turl drove straight north, following the overgrown bed of an old highway. For all his joviality, he was thinking very hard. Fear and leverage. If you didn't have leverage, you could make fear work. He felt he had already accomplished a little bit. The animal had seemed impressed back there. But he had a lot to do to get both fear and leverage, and get enough of them to break this animal and cow it completely. "Comfortable?" asked Turl. Johnny snapped out of his daydream and became instantly alert. This was not the Turl he knew. Casual. Chatty, even. Johnny was on his guard.
"Where are we going?" he said.
"Just a little drive. New ground car. Doesn't she run well?" The tank ran well, all right. The plate on the panel said, "Mark III General Purpose Tank, Executive. The Enemy is Dead, Intergalactic Mining Company, Serial ET-53647243-54-7. Use only Faro power cartridges and breathe gas. Faro is the breath and power of life."
"Is Faro part of Intergalactic?" said Johnny.
Turl took his eyes off driving for a moment and looked suspiciously at Johnny. Then he shrugged. "Don't you bother your little rat brain about the size of Intergalactic, animal. It's a monopoly that stretches across every galaxy. It's a size and scope you couldn't grasp if you had 1,000 rat brains. It's all run from the home planet, isn't it?" "Why not?" said Turl. "Something wrong with that?"
"No," said Johnny. "No. Just seems an awfully big company to be run from one planet."
"That isn't all Cyclo runs," said Turl. "There's dozens of companies the size of Intergalactic, and Cyclo runs them all."
"Must be a big planet," said Johnny.
"Big and powerful," said Turl.
"Might as well add a little more fear.
Cyclo can and has crushed every opposition that ever stood in her path. One Imperial checkmark on an order, and a whole race can go..."
"Like the Chinkos?" said Johnny.
"Yes."
Turl was bored. "Like the human race here?"
"Yes, and like one rat-brained animal will go pfft if it doesn't shut up," said Turl in sudden irritation.
"Thank you," said Johnny.
"That's better. Even becoming properly polite."
Turl's good humor returned, but it wouldn't have had he realized that the "thank you" had been for vital information.
Abruptly, their headlong pace swept them into the outskirts of the city.
"Where are we?" said Johnny.
"They called it Denver."
"Aha," thought Johnny. The great village had been named Denver. If it had a name to itself, that implied that there were other great villages.
He reached for the Chinko guidebook of the area, and was just reading about the library when the ground car came to a stop.
"Where's this?" inquired Johnny, looking around.
They were at the eastern edge of the town and slightly to the south. "Knew you had a rat brain," said Turl. "This is where you..."
He laughed suddenly, and that made it hard to talk.
"Where you attacked a tank."
Johnny looked around. It was indeed the place.
He looked through all the slits, taking in the area.
"What are we doing here?"
Turl grinned in what he was quite certain was his most friendly grin. "We're looking for your horse. Isn't that nice?"
Johnny thought fast. There was more to this. He had better be very calm. He saw no bones, but that meant nothing, for wild animals would have been at work.
He looked at Turl and realized the brute actually believed a horse would wait around.
Windsplitter most probably had trotted on after them a while, and then wandered back toward home in the mountains. "There are countless animals out in the open here," said Johnny. "Picking out those two horses..."
"Rat brain, you don't have a grip on machines. It shows. Look here."
Turl turned on a large screen set into the instrument panel. The immediate vicinity showed up on it. Turl turned a knob and the scene was viewable from different directions. Then Turl pushed a button and there was a dull pop, like a small explosion in the top of the car. Looking up through the overhead port, Johnny saw a spinning object fly up in the air 100 feet. Turl pushed a lever up and the object went up. Turl pulled the lever down and the object came lower. What it was seeing registered on the view screen.
"That's why you can't get away," said Turl. "Look."
He changed a lever on the screen, and the image became enlarged. He pushed a button marked Heat Search, and the screen and spinner above went on to automatic. Johnny watched as groups of animals were zeroed in, enlarged, reduced. Other groups found and inspected up close. More animals spotted and examined.
"Just sit and watch that," said Turl, "and tell me if you see your horse."
He laughed.
"Security chief of Earth running a lost and found department for an animal owned by an animal."
He laughed more loudly at his own joke. There were cattle and cattle and cattle. There were wolves, small ones from the nearby mountains, and huge ones down from the north. There were coyotes. There was even a rattler. There were no horses at all.
"Well," said Turl, "we'll just drive along to the south. You keep your eyes open, animal, and you'll get your horse back."
They drove at a leisurely pace. Johnny watched the scope. Time went on. Still no horses, none at all. Turl began to get irritated.
"Leverage. Leverage."
His luck was out today. "No horses," said Johnny. And he knew very well that if he had seen Windsplitter, he would have kept still. Turl finally looked at the scope. Ahead of them was a small hill, rocky on top, with a lot of trees distributed around it, and darkness in among the trees. There were cattle, some with rather big horns, just to the north of it in the open. Fear, then. The day wouldn't be wasted. He swerved the car into the trees and stopped.
"Get out," said Turl.
He put on his breathe mask and hit the door buttons. He threw out the leash and then reached into the huge compartment under the seat and drew out a blast rifle along with a bag of grenades. Johnny stood in the open and took off his mask. He switched tanks before he put it on the seat. It had been a long drive. Turl took a position at the edge of the trees, the rocks behind him, the open plain in front.
"Come here, animal," he said.
The leash was trailing. Johnny walked over to Turl. He wasn't going to give the monster a chance to gun him down.
"I'm going to give you a little exhibition," said Turl. "I was top shot in my school. You ever notice how neat the rat heads were blown off? Some of them were 50 paces away." "You're not listening, animal."
No, Johnny was not listening. He had caught a whiff of something, and he looked at the rocks behind him. There was an opening in them.
A cave?
There was the whiff again. Turl reached down and jerked the leash, almost snapping Johnny off his feet. Johnny got up from his knees and looked again toward the cave. He gripped the kill club in his fist. With an expert motion, Turl snapped a grenade onto the end of the blast rifle.
"Watch this."
There were a half dozen cattle about 80 paces out on the plain. Two of them were heavy horned bulls, old and tough. The other four were cows. Turl lifted the blast rifle muzzle high and fired. The grenade soared in a long arc over the top of the cattle and landed well beyond them. It exploded in a bright green flash.